This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for April 6, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, Japan is going to ask its consumers whether its borders should be open to U.S. beef. Also, the immigration bill has bogged down in the Senate. And an amendment to a supplemental appropriations bill would provide producers $4 billion for ag disasters last year and escalating input costs. I'll have details of these and other stories later this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by with the latest on debate of health care issues in rural America. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. May wheat in Kansas City, 431, up 9. May wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 352.5, up 5.5. July, 366, up 6. May corn, 241.5, up 5.25. July, 252.75, up 5.25. September, 261.5, up 4.75. December, 272.75, up 4.75. May beans, 564, up 2.5. July, 578, up 2. August, 583.75, up 4.25. November, 593.25, up 1.5. May soybean meal, 172.70, up 40. May soybean oil, 22.67, up 30. At the Merck, April feeders, 155, up 52.5. April live cattle, 79.70, up 80. April lean hogs, 54.82.5, down 82.5 on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Want to start on the outside markets. We saw new contract highs in silver and gold and crude oil creeping up towards $70. Did that have any impetus at all at what happened at the board?
It probably offered spillover support to the market, but the commodity markets are still somewhat focused on last week's planting intentions report, which showed a big drop in corn acres and a big increase in soybean acres, and really very little any up in the wheat. So while I think that offers some underlying support from the inflationary aspect of the marketplace, I think corn and wheat are kind of working their own fundamentals of worrying about maybe not having enough supply around for the coming year and to meet demand. So therefore, the market needs to try to encourage additional plantings or begin to start slowing down some of those the active demand pace in the marketplace.
Looks like corn traders were in the business of trying to buy some more acres. Contract high today, 273.25 in the December.
Yeah, but we didn't do that in the front months. The front months still held under last Friday's high, which I think is something to kind of watch. The other thing is that I think the market seriously needs to kind of go into a bull spread mode if it really begins to get worried about future supplies, because if distant supplies are going to be short, then the end users are going to have to come forward and get their hands on the old crop inventory, because old crop inventory is going to be worth more money. So we really haven't seen that take place, where we see the market get into more of a bull spread mode, where the strength would be in the May and the July contracts, and we would begin to close that spread. So while we've seen some closing of it, we haven't seen anything in a big way yet.
In fact, we're seeing some premium in 2007.
Well, the 2007 is going to probably go along with whatever 2006 is, but you're going to have to see some spread take hold. If the market is seriously worried about inventory levels and not having enough supply around, you're going to see the front months take off first here. I think that would be the first signal that the market's going to go on up for a new leg to the upside. But we haven't really seen that take hold yet.
Over in Kansas City, wheat gapped to the upside today. Tried to fill that gap left over from 13 March, 14 March, between 429 and 434, and pretty much set in the middle of the gap by the time the close came around.
Well, wheat's trying to make a recovery from a, it's had a pretty good decline. So we're trying to see some kind of recovery back from that decline that it's had over the past few weeks in here. And we'll just have to kind of see whether or not we can go on up and begin a new leg to the upside here. But for the time being, you kind of got to feel that the bean market and the wheat market are more in a recovery mode after the trend has shifted down. Some follow-through to the upside could begin to shift the trend back to the upside. But the trend in wheat and soybeans have shifted down and is trying to see whether or not it can kind of get in line with corn. The corn trend is solidly higher, and whether or not corn's got enough horsepower here to kind of pull wheat and soybeans with it or not remains to be seen.
You look at that soybean in the May contract, it did finish higher today, but given what was going on over in the corn pit, one must wonder, what's really going on there. We didn't even get to Monday's high at 574.5 today.
Well, soybeans, the function of soybeans is to discourage plantings, and the function of corn is probably to encourage plantings. It's going to be awfully tough, I think, for soybeans to follow corn. I'm not saying it can't, but on what we know today, at least based upon USDA planting's intentions, something else is going to have to come along to try to get beans to kind of pop up. Now, I think, they were oversold. They had a pretty big hit to the downside after the report, so that it was ripe here for soybeans to have some kind of short covering type activity. Whether or not that follows through tomorrow will remain seen. But we're pretty well down for the week. It's going to be pretty hard to kind of pull out a higher weekly finish on soybeans. So you still have to view soybeans as mostly as a technical recovery here, with corn the leader here, worried the most about short-term weather forecasts here showing more rain into the Corn Belt and not a lot of planting activity. However, there is some planting activity taking place. I did talk to some people in Indiana that are moving. They are planting corn. So there are some corn planters beginning to roll, and depending upon how this system plays out here over the weekend and that, we may see some pretty good planting activity next week.
Ending stocks estimates for the Monday reports are out for corn. Average guess, 2.261 billion bushels. Soybeans, 574, and that's a million in the millions. And then the wheat, 534 in millions. Is Monday's report going to be much of a mover?
I think that's all old news at this point. I think the stocks report kind of indicated that there might be some downward adjustment in corn ending stocks. Nothing different really in beans. Kind of looks like maybe the trades went to bubble that up a little bit. Export demand on corn has been weak here the last few weeks. So USDA, at some point in time might decide to bring that export estimate back down again. They raised it up here a month or two ago because we had a pretty good round of export activity, but that's kind of fizzled out here. Or the past month. But no, I think that's all old news. It's everything's new crop and planting progress, new crop prospects and everything from here on out is pretty much what the name of the game is here, I think, over the next 30 days, Dave.
Thanks much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. At the bottom of the hour, the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather, taking a look at Mike Sola's forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. He says cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows ranging from 43 degrees in the far north to near 60 degrees in the south. Then tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, and highs ranging from 46 degrees in northwestern Illinois to 76 degrees in southern Indiana. In agricultural news, the Japanese government will conduct a series of meetings beginning next week to gauge consumer feelings regarding U.S. beef. If the government finds consumers favor resumption of beef trade, it would then ask the country's Food Safety Commission for clearance. Earlier this week, officials at the S&P 500 suggested beef trade would not resume till later this year or in early 2007. Meanwhile, House Agriculture Chairman Bob Goodlatte, a Republican from Virginia, says he's continuing to explore an appropriate way for Congress to respond should Japan drag its heels. USDA Undersecretary Charles Lambert yesterday wrapped up 2 days of senior-level talks in Tokyo on the BSE issue, providing the Japanese government a list of items that will be checked during inspections of U.S. meat processing facilities. Meanwhile, media reports out of South Korea say the timeline for resumption of U.S. beef is in serious jeopardy. Information provided by USDA to South Korea includes a confession that the U.S. cannot determine for certain whether an Alabama cow with mad cow disease was born before April of 1998, a date South Korea says is a condition for reopening the border. The Senate Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee added a $4 billion ag disaster ag package to a supplemental appropriations bill this week. The amendment to the appropriations bill had good support with 28 Senate co-sponsors. American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Public Policy Director Mary Kay Thatcher says that should improve the bill's chances for passage. And Thatcher says the current political climate in Washington, D.C. may be even more important.
You know, it wouldn't have any chance at all if it wasn't an election year. But I think we've got a pretty good chance of prevailing on the Senate side. Certainly when we get to the House side, that's where the real fight will be. But, you know, because it is an election year, I think there will be a lot of people who won't want to say no completely. Probably $4 billion isn't realistic, but we're going to work to see that we get as much of that as possible.
Thatcher says to overcome opposition in the House, supporters need to get the backing of lawmakers who are facing ag disaster aid as an election year issue.
We need to get some early support, and there will be a bill dropped as early as today that will mirror what was done in the Senate, and we'll have to try to get as many folks to sign on as possible. I think, you know, with the disasters hitting more and more the area, you know, the late Texas wildfires in Oklahoma, and now we've got those folks that'll have an interest in it. I think we've still got to go back and round up the Midwesterners from the problems we had with the Port of New Orleans and everything backing up last fall, because this will be a disaster bill that'll take in assistance from last year. And so we've just got to get some early support.
Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson, the ranking Democrat on the House Ag Committee, is the lead sponsor of the companion bill introduced in the House yesterday. Senate consideration of a border security and immigration bill with major implications for farm employers and foreign farm workers bogged down so badly yesterday, it appears questionable whether Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, a Republican from Tennessee, will even get a vote on the measure before Congress is scheduled to leave Friday for a two-week Easter recess. Senate Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Tom Harkin, a Democrat of Iowa, says that even if the Senate managed to pass a bill before the recess, he does not believe that the House and Senate will agree on a final conference version this year. The Senate has been considering a bill that would tighten border security, but also make provisions for undocumented foreign workers to stay in the U.S. and for better procedures for farmers to hire foreign workers in the future. Thousands of Canadian farmers staged a demonstration yesterday in Ottawa, Canada's national capital. Farm leaders called the event the Solidarity Rally. President of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, Ron Bonnet, says the message was simple. Canadian farmers need help.
What we're trying to get the message out across the country is the fact that there's an urgent need for the federal government to get involved in making the investment that's required for agriculture, get some money into the hands of farmers this spring.
The OFA says there's a massive hole in farm income, and current Canadian farm programs are not working. And a federal judge in Argentina has issued a temporary ruling against the government's three-week ban on beef exports. The ruling will allow the export of beef until the judge makes a final ruling about the export ban's constitutionality. The case was filed by the Rural Society, which believes Argentina's economic ministry has violated the beef industry's right to engage in free commerce. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
University of Illinois Extension is helping to define the public policy issues surrounding health care in rural America. Recent studies show a large discrepancy between the amount of health care and health care insurance used by poor Americans in rural areas and their counterparts in metropolitan areas of the nation. Todd Gleason has more on the facts and figures, which will define the problem and some potential solutions.
The labor market defines how and if the working poor in Illinois and across America have health insurance. That's the simple conclusion health and consumer economist Paul McNamara has come to after reviewing data from several government-funded studies. McNamara works for University of Illinois Extension and is heavily involved in the health insurance debate. His primary function has been to define some of the issues, one of which is the disparity between how many unemployed and working poor in places like Chicago and East St. Louis have health insurance compared to the same economically defined group in rural parts of the state. Those living in rural areas are about 7% more likely not to have health insurance. McNamara says that this is because the employers are smaller mom-and-pop shops, which don't offer health benefits. McNamara, the economist, says there are some viable political solutions to the problem.
Because of the welfare reform legislation that passed Congress a few years ago, states have the ability to expand the Medicaid program to low-income working parents. It's within the state's ability to disregard certain sources of income and expand the eligibility of low-income working parents for Medicaid. That's one thing that states can consider. Right now, we don't need a federal law to do that. It's already the ability for states to do that's already there. So that's one thing.
Another solution McNamara says states might consider is increasing reimbursement policies for providers offering health services to people on Medicaid. McNamara says the clinics work on the margin and deserve to be better compensated by the state for their health services.
Both of those, the expansion of the Medicaid program is a possibility, and also the revisiting reimbursement rates and making sure that funding is available for safety net service providers in rural areas. Both of those, I think, are viable options for policy.
One other political solution is to rewrite the regulations surrounding how groups of people can band together to purchase health insurance. In rural areas of the state, this might allow small employers and the self-employed to bargain together to lower the cost of health insurance. Finally, McNamara says taxpayers should be concerned about the lack of health care for the poor. He says health care is an integrated economic system. To the extent, he goes on, that some people cannot access doctors and clinics because they're either uninsured or underinsured, there's an economic burden for the rest of the population. Preventative treatment is cheaper than emergency health care, and the emergency costs are passed on to the paying customers. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, with December corn making new contract highs today, did the phone ring off the hook?
Yeah, we've been really busy today and been pretty much on the phone since we got here this morning. That, you know, getting past the 270 triggered some, I think, a lot of offers that were in the cash market for, like, new crop harvest delivery, depending on what area, you know, either like at the 240 area or 245 in some cases. Probably in some the more aggressive areas in the 250 area for harvest. So some key numbers that got hit from a harvest corn standpoint, and a lot of people just making sales too.
It's interesting to me that when you look at these markets, you're seeing that the structure is a little unusual, that deferred contracts actually trading at a premium to these cash contracts, and how are people playing that?
As far as like your March corn and that type of thing, you mean?
Well, December 2007 to December 2006, for example.
Yeah, I was looking at that. In some cases, I noticed today the 2007 got over 260. I think there's some interest in that, but people really seem to have their focus, in at least what I see, is they seem to have their focus on this 2006 crop and want to continue to sell into this rally, and the amount they're looking at for 2007 are fairly minimal right now because they see a long time between now and then. Good levels to make some, you know, starting sales, no doubt about that.
I suppose nothing going on in soybeans.
No, very quiet in the soybeans. I think we will see the bases come in some on the soybeans if we stay at these levels or lower. Interesting to see that some of the cash bids we got to yesterday on the lows were pretty similar to what we had, you know, gotten to before. We're still kind of in that same range that we've been in since last September. It's just, you know, we're at the low end of it right now.
Your prices today?
Cash corn is at 219, cash beans at 536.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, and in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy about the agricultural weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The mother of 17-year-old Charles Gaston says she wants some answers about her son's death in the collapse of her stairwell at a parking garage in downtown Danville. Carol Barfell says she believes Gaston was in the garage more than 12 hours before his body was found early yesterday. She wants to know how her son could have lain in the stairwell undetected for so long. The incident remains under investigation. Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower says the parking garage will reopen for use on Monday, but the stairwells will stay closed. A defense lawyer says Maurice Legrone Jr. made bad and even stupid decisions that sank a car in Clinton Lake in 2003, but did not intentionally drown his then-girlfriend's three children. Attorney Jeff Justice told jurors during closing arguments in Legrone's trial today that the prosecution hasn't proven he murdered the children or offered a motive. Meanwhile, prosecutor Roger Simpson told jurors that the state isn't required to show motive. Simpson says there can't be a logical motive to kill three young children. University of Illinois trustees will consider a proposal next week to raise tuition 9.5% at the Urbana and Chicago campuses and 22% at the Springfield campus as that school becomes a four-year institution. The Board of Trustees will also consider new fees at the three campuses to help pay for $800 million in backlogged building maintenance. An Indiana State University student is challenging a school policy after he was kicked off the campus in Terre Haute for distributing flyers critical of the Army. University policy says only people sponsored by student groups or other campus organizations can hand out flyers on campus. In a boost for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the New York Mercantile Exchange today says it will be listing all its energy contracts on the Merck's electronic trading platform. That means the New York Exchange's energy futures and options contracts will now be available virtually 24 hours a day via the Merck's Globex trading system. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Mark Russo from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we had some heavy rains this morning here in Champaign-Urbana. How did it play out across the Corn Belt?
Well, we are seeing the start of another period of unsettled weather here across the nation's midsection, and this will continue through today on into tomorrow before cooler, drier weather moves in over the upcoming weekend. When all is said and done here, it looks like we are going to come in at about 75-80% of the entire Midwest, receiving totals ranging anywhere from 3-4 tenths of an inch on the light side to as much as an inch and a half localized 2-inch amounts on the heavier side. But overall, it looks like at least the most widespread heaviest amounts look to be across the northern sections of the Midwest in places north of I-80.
And then a drying, as you said, another rain event later next week?
Well, it looks like as we go into next week, actually the pattern looks to become less active here across the Midwest as the jet stream begins to ease northward with time. So as we go into next week, it looks like there will be some rain activity across the northern sections of the Midwest. But for the southern belt, it looks relatively dry. And with above normal temperatures, we think that next week's going to be a pretty open week for corn planting across the southern corn belt.
Certainly, folks raring to get into the fields. What about down in the Delta?
Well, down there, also going to see some rain activity here over the next several days, but kind of similar to the southern Midwest. Next week looks to be a relatively warm and dry week, and that should allow some good field work and planting progress.
You know, certainly areas south of Virginia and the Carolinas could use more rain. Are they going to get any anytime soon?
Yeah, they're going to get a little bit here coming up. In fact, this system here impacting the Midwest over the next couple of days will also impact the southeast, mainly over the upcoming weekend. So that'll bring some needed moisture, just like you said, to areas such as the Carolinas and down into Georgia.
Let's turn our attention to South America. Looks like, based on what I'm seeing, that Brazil's in line for some rain.
Yeah, they're getting some rain activity across the northern sections of their soybean acreage, places such as Mato Grosso, Goiás, on into Minas Gerais. Those areas here will have some spotty harvest delays here and there. But overall, soybean harvest progress is pretty much right on track here, and we don't see anything really heavy or widespread enough to cause any significant harvest delays.
What about Argentina, particularly Cordoba? They've been really wet lately.
Yeah, they got another inch and a half of rain here overnight, but it looks like as we now go through the next several days, dry weather is on tap, and overall the pattern for the next couple of weeks is going to feature limited rainfall. So after the delays that we're seeing right now, they should be able to get back in the fields here probably by Saturday or Sunday, and then work relatively open as we go through next week.
And before we let you go, let's turn our attention to the hard red winter wheat crop, particularly in southwestern Kansas and southeastern Colorado, heading over into West Texas. Are they going to get any rain?
Well, you're seeing a little bit of rain activity here today, and that'll continue tomorrow across western Kansas. But overall, the rain activity will be spotty, light in nature, and really won't do all that heck of a much to improve soil moisture for winter wheat development. Looking out ahead, really the best opportunity for rain in that key western Kansas area and nearby areas, it's going to be about a week from now, next Friday on into Saturday. That system that's projected to move across the plains at that time, that looks to be the best system here, at least coming up. It does not look like all areas are going to get significant rain, but certainly that's the next best opportunity. So that's really the focus between now and late next week, is with that rain system. And right now it looks like they'll get some rain, but not enough to turn around the situation.
Thank you much, Mark.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. Central Time for Commodity Week. And you can subscribe to our Closing Market Report by podcast. It's as easy as going to our website at WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.